Ha ha ha. I didn't know we were on.
Well, we can start rolling now. See? So we're here with Joe Neff for yet another. Actually, this is a new thing I'm going to be starting to do. And it was ironically much easier to get Joe into the Magical Studio in the Sky for this. Because he wasn't ducking my emails for weeks on end.
Hey, Podcast Land. I love being with Kevin.
We're going to be doing a couple bits with Joe as we lead up to the 666.
Oh, this is going to have to be cut.
No, it's not.
Really?
This is podcast.
The 666th annual 24-hour Ohio 24-hour horror marathon.
See, you didn't even get it right.
Shock around the clock.
That's right. Da-da-da. But yeah, we just had the 24-hour sci-fi marathon about a month ago.
Smashing success.
And I emailed Joe and I said, you know what? A lot of people listened to this last episode, and maybe it was Bruce that brought it. Maybe he had minions.
It was me. I just kept downloading over and over again.
Okay, that's why it was like, maybe that's why it was at 50 instead of. So, but that's my point. As I said, let's get on here because obviously people like to listen to it. There were more people. There were more downloads than there were people at the marathon, which
that's pretty impressive.
I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know what that says.
That's our big announcement. We're moving the marathon online. We're going to stream the whole thing next time, and Bruce and I are going to be in a remote location. Oh. Maybe even here in the castle in the sky.
The magical studio in the sky. Well, and here's the thing. This shows how much I've gotten to know Joe over the years. I have invited him into the magical studio in the sky many times, and this time the maid was not here, and it kind of looks like a bomb went off.
I'm so disappointed. Yeah.
Times are tight. It's like a Middle Eastern nightclub that's been bombed out.
Cutting the maid service. Yeah. That's the one thing I liked about coming over here was the maid service.
You always felt that it was clean.
I like the maid too, and that's doubly disappointing.
That was just me.
Oh.
In a special dress. Sorry.
Wow. Well, you know, things are making a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have curves.
Yes, he does. You displayed them actually at Sci-Fi.
That's right.
Yeah,
that was an impromptu attempt at being funny.
For those of you listening, Kevin, impromptu attempt at being funny is probably the most diplomatic way to put it. He gets up and says, "Hey, everybody, I'm going to imitate the scene from Quiet Earth,
the opening scene, which
features a man lying in bed naked, and he starts taking his shirt off, and then he takes his shirt off." And then he starts threatening to take his pants off. And I was disappointed with the crowd because there were enough people there to boo that. But there were no overwhelming boos until the end. They just kind of sat there like,
What was fascinating about it from my perspective was I started doing it, got no... And I was expecting it to be the very typical Wesley Crusher reporting for duty, you know, which everyone would boo off. That, you know, somebody did that every year, I think, in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was expecting that response, and it was kind of silence, because I think people were like going, okay, let's see this impression, forgetting the fact that the guy was completely naked in bed and had no dialogue.
The crowd has become so domesticated, and they have such good taste now, that they don't even yell, they don't even boo people off. It's like, well, let's wait this out.
Let's see what he does.
Let's see where this goes. This could be potentially interesting, yes.
That's a lot of
weight. Oh, wait, now he's taking his shirt off. Well, but there might be something else.
Well, that's the thing. I took the shirt off, and then you could hear people getting it. And from what I could... From what I could tell is that there was half of you freaks wanting me to continue to see how far I would go, and then the other half finally realized, oh, dear God, no, we don't need to do this. There are children in the room.
So half the crowd is getting so old that they can't even catch on to the fact that you're taking your shirt off and maybe your pants off, and the other half of the crowd is so young and tasteful, they're like,
Performance art.
I think there's a meaning behind this. I really do.
I should have brought out my scarf and hipster glasses.
Yeah, and I turn at some point thinking, oh, he'll be gone soon, and then I turn back and you're half nude at that point.
I don't leave until I get sent away, and even then.
That's very true. I've heard for a lot of things. Kevin Carr, I don't leave till I'm sent away. Hello, ladies.
But I got a card game out of it, I think.
I think
it
you
was
did.
Cool.
Yeah, we had some awesome prizes.
Great prizes.
Hey,
was it Epic Loot?
Thanks to Epic Loot down in near Dayton.
Excellent.
They are if you're in Dayton right now and you're not going to Epic Loot,
shame on you.
I probably don't like you at all. And I don't just say that because my friends run the store, but yeah, they've supported us, and they have been the prize outlet for a couple marathons in a row. And I feel bad about giving away some of this stuff because it's all so nice. There's like not even junky things. I think I held back on things this year thinking, oh, we'll save these for next time because I don't want to waste these on. Well, you feel bad because it's like, hey, give away a board game to some dude who got up and said, hello, I'm in a costume.
I'm Wesley Crusher. That deserves
a hat. That doesn't,
There's somebody going, well, here's your Batman and Robin Mr. Freeze action figure from 1998.
Yeah. So yeah, there's something to entice newbies to come to the marathon if they're listening, that hey, the per capita quality of prizes is so high that you're bound to walk away with something decent and not just a hat.
And you know, when you I expected that back in the 80s and 90s when it was at the Drexel North, you had an 800 seat theater and you know, you could sell half the tickets and still be incredibly profitable with some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And because I was a cheap college student and high school student. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, if I'm going to spend that whopping $20 to get in, which is like, what was the price back in the
huge,
not early 90s?
Oh God. Early 90s. It was like
$20.
It wasn't even that. It was
18. Wasn't
it? Probably the top price may have been 20, but I think you're starting at 16, 17 bucks.
Yeah. Cause
you could figure out, we have an entire archive online at scifimarathon.com where you could look up these things.
I was going to say when you announced the return of the horror marathon, you put a ticket from the last time it was at a Drexel theater.
That's right. I think
it was $18.
I tried to be... No. For history's sake, now you're baiting me.
Oh,
now you're saying,
God.
Like, hey, Joe, here, have an obscure piece of marathon trivia. I'm thinking of something different. I actually, last August when I teased that the marathon was coming back, I put the ticket for the 5th annual Night of the Living Drexel on there to kind of give people the hopefully they got it, that, oh, wait, I get it. It's
going to
be at the Drexel. Yeah, that one. That was from the 5th one. And that was
the last one. At
the seventh one was the last one up there.
Oh, the one you posted was the 5th annual, which has Dracula on it. It was $15 was the starting.
Okay,
price.
That's Count Yorga, buddy boy. Okay, so get your vampires right.
Me. Get back on track. We're just here to sort of keeping the conversation going.
Yeah,
that's I think what we want to do.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit about the films that are announced for the horror marathon.
Sure.
Coming up, but we're also going to talk about some marathon history.
Sure.
And what you might have expected previously and what you can expect now. And one of the things, let's break it up. Let's talk about a film and then I'll ask a question.
Okay, let me pull out the information. I hope that came through as fake paper sound on the... There we go.
Nothing like overdramatic paper sound.
Now. All right, Kevin, read from the paper.
What's the first film that we're talking about?
Well, I thought you had the paper, Kevin.
Nosferatu?
Nosferatu.
Not what was actually shown in the trailer.
I should
talk
boy,
about
should
that.
I
talk about that.
You mean the wrong trailer at the marathon? Well, okay, full disclosure.
Oh,
and he's
God.
Disclosed it already. Our buddy Dave Zucchini, who is probably aiming a gun at my car right now because I'm saying this.
Okay.
He does such yeoman's work for us. I mean, there are so many cool things about the event that he does kind of out of the kindness, out of his own heart, or out of blind loyalty or brain damage or something.
Or just plain stupidity.
Yeah. And in the past, many, many, many years ago, we teased at for the second Nightmare at Studio 35 back in 2000, we teased the first X amount of films we'd booked at a previous little mini marathon we had, and we showed the trailers for them. And so I said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we actually showed all the trailers for the films we booked for the horror marathon so far at this year's sci-fi? So they volunteered to make decent video conversions because a few of the trailers we didn't have on film, and a few probably aren't on film anymore at all or are digital copies now.
Yeah.
So Dave put the reel together, and I told him the films, and it started off with The Shining, and then it went to Nosferatu. But it was the 1922 version of Nosferatu. And I turned to him and I said, wait, you know we're showing the Werner Herzog remake of Nosferatu, right? And he just kind of kicked himself. And then I had to get up in front of the crowd and say, we're not showing this version. It's actually the Werner Herzog version.
And he did it just like a gangster from a 20s
I did,
movie.
Yeah. I said, so whatever. Pay for it. I don't know. So, yeah, if you fell asleep right after that Nosferatu trailer started or left the theater in a rage for some reason or
like, passed out. Bullshit. 22 from an old movie?
Please.
What is this crap?
I will take no more of this classic stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, if you did that, it's the 19...
Because it was shortly after Metropolis you showed it. Maybe they just got burned down on German you know,
if you've repressed films. That memory, just in case, or if you don't have access to the web, or if you're living in a cave somewhere, I don't know.
Or if you have access, but you just don't.
Or if you're just on Twitter and you're like, I can't pay attention to websites. What am I doing? Yeah, it's the 1978 Werner Herzog remake of Nosferatu, a new 2K DCP version, courtesy of our buddies at Bleeding Light Film Group, who were responsible for quite possibly one of the great unexpected pleasures in marathon history. That is the new uncut print of Possession that played in 2012.
I was waiting for a Serbian film to rear its ugly head again.
Sure, yeah. Let's give them credit for that, too.
So is this... I've never seen this version.
Yeah, it's...
Is it good?
I've only seen it once, many years ago on video. It is Bruno Ganz... Famous German actor who you would know if you saw who he was, but
you would recognize
him. But you're not big on titles from that era, so I won't try to make you think of those. The great Isabella Gianni, who was also in Possession, and is just
As naked and crazy as she was in Possession? I'm just curious.
Oh God, you know I'm going to make myself look stupid, but then again I'm already making myself look stupid.
You came on this show,
yeah, exactly.
All I care about is assessing the
boob factor. If there's any gratuitous nudity in this. But of course then you have the man himself, the madman of Berlin, Klaus Kinski, as Nosferatu.
Yeah.
And that to me is kind of worth the price of admission alone. But
with the bugles on his fingers.
Yes, with the bugle, and he eats them too at one point. Like, is that great? I love having bugles on my fingers.
That's amazing.
It's very...
It's like Klaus Kinski just walked in the room.
It is. This fall, I will be debuting my one-man show, Klaus Kinski.
Klaus Kinski.
I'm going to... Yeah. So wait for the marathon. I'm going to be the special guest at the marathon as Klaus Kinski. Say, ladies and gentlemen...
Maybe I'll just... Because I bald or I shave my head.
I don't know where this is going.
And I am, but I'm fat. Maybe I'll be fat. Klaus Kinski for the marathon. And then I'll threaten to take my clothes off and I'll win cool prize from Epic Loot that would really be a shitty prize if it was some other people giving it to me.
I hear I'm going deaf, obviously, because I thought you said I bald. I shaved my head. I was like, where is this going?
Why am I speaking like the lyrics to Friday, the video?
Okay, here's what I can tell you. Nosferatu, it is very lyrical and deliberate and pretty and beautiful.
How long is it?
107 minutes, I think.
That's not bad.
No.
Because the original's like 68 minutes, isn't it? It's pretty short, isn't it?
Yeah, the original's... I think it's about that long, yeah.
I found with silent films, they're either like 68 minutes or like 500 minutes. There's never two-hour...
I should tailor my response to all your potential audiences. So Twitter users, it's a long film and it's slow.
Oh my gosh. The hatred for Twitter.
Film connoisseurs, it's a beautiful, stirring, moving, meditative, epic work of existential vampiric angst.
You're assuming we have film connoisseurs who listen to this.
Well, and then there's the middle ground. You probably haven't seen it, and it's a brand new remastered copy, and it's got some pretty iconic actors, and it's kind of cool. And I would think, too, from what I remember, if you enjoy Nosferatu, the original Nosferatu, if you enjoy kind of the classic Dracula films... Here's one I think of, because I just recently watched this for the first time. The John Badham version of Dracula, the 1978-79 with Frank Langella.
Frank Langella before I got fat.
Yeah, yeah. I'm probably messing this up, and someone who is a Nosferatu aficionado is going to get on Twitter in 5 minutes and say, at Ohio Marathons, watch the Herzog version before you show it, dinguses. Hello. But in watching John Badham's Dracula, it reminded me of kind of the tone that Herzog's Nosferatu has. In that it's like very nice production design and costuming. And it's an epic gothic love story.
Yeah.
You know, it's not stuff flying around all over the place. So does that answer your question? Do you think that?
Yeah. I mean, because when did the original Nosferatu was shown once before?
Yeah, believe it or not, it's only shown once. It was the 2001 Studio 35 Horror Marathon with... live music by the Weird Lovemakers.
That was the one that was on like the second week of November, wasn't it?
No, that was the first studio marathon.
Okay.
Second one we did on normal time.
Okay.
That was no, I take that back. This was the third.
Okay.
The third Nightmare at Studio 35. The Joe November. Bob Briggs marathon.
Okay.
Yeah. That was on a regular weekend. a regular October non pre Thanksgiving weekend.
I just remember Nosferatu on the poster. I thought he was on the poster.
Wait. Let me think. Oh, that's right. On the flyer for the first Nightmare at Studio 35, Nosferatu's on the back.
Okay.
Because I needed art and I was young and stupid and thought, I'll just put that on. No one will think we're showing
happens.
It. Yeah. So yeah, Nosferatu, Herzog, Kinski.
Looking forward to that.
Johnny.
I've never seen it. And so I'm very curious to see.
I'm probably going
to
eat my hat now or eat my words, and you'll be wildly bored by it.
You can go win a hat at a costume contest and then eat it.
Sure. You know what? If it helps to sell more tickets, fine. I'm going to eat a hat at the marathon. Okay.
Right.
Talk about synchronicity and 6 degrees of separation.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, this is weird. This is going to blow your mind.
Where is this going?
This is totally, I'm about to draw from the heavens. Werner Herzog was the subject of a documentary by the late Les Blank, famous documentarian, he just died this past year, called Burden of Dreams. And Burden of Dreams was about the making of Herzog's film Fitzcarraldo, which also had Klaus Kinski, surprise, surprise, and is based on a real-life kind of madman, industrialist, inventor, blah, 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 who tries to tow an entire ship over a hill in the Amazon. And in the making of the film, Herzog wanted to replicate this realism. And so he had the whole ship and had his crew film the people towing it over. And it's
Terry Gilliam didn't direct
No, believe it or not. Yeah, he was still safely ensconced in Monty Python land at that point. He hadn't totally gone over the edge. But here's where it all connects. This is crazy, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, my God.
I should start.
The build-up's amazing.
I should start with the Tom Waits voice at this point. And be like, so here's how it all really connects. I'm telling you, it's crazy. So Les Blank made a short documentary, and it's included on the Criterion Collection DVD of Burden of Dreams, called Werner Herzog Eats His Shoe.
Okay.
And Herzog and Les Blank made a bet, and Herzog said, Les, if you make your first film by this date, or if you can get this project done, I will eat my shoe. And Les Blank made the film, and so Herzog and Blank and someone else, they got in front of a crowd, like a live theater crowd, and they boiled Werner Herzog's shoe, and he ate at least a decent portion of his shoe in front of the audience to pay off the bet. Wow. And the mini documentary is about the whole process behind it. So, because we're showing Herzog's Nosferatu, sure, I'll eat a hat, just if it means
That's
more
amazing.
People.
That's amazing.
And now,
now it's on. Now it's recorded.
Now Twitter's going to call me liar.
Let's see that
liar,
happen.
Liar someday. Yeah.
And don't go bringing some sort of edible underwear hat or something like
no.
that.
Well,
no. No.
Whoa. Almost on the show. Almost fell apart. Oh my God. Yeah.
The technology problems.
Oh boy. Yeah.
The high tech world. Of
the studio. The studio in the sky almost crashed into the earth. That was.
Yeah.
This.
Joe just did the podcasting equivalent of knocking a glass of water into the entire control panel on the Enterprise.
Oh, Glavin, yeah.
Oh, heavens.
This, by the way, is why you listen to this podcast, because you can hear long, digressive stories like this about how everything's connected.
We'll see how well this will.
Have
how
I mentioned that? I'm starting a podcast in the fall about 6 degrees of separation.
You
and
should.
Long, digressive stories.
Are you really? Or are you just bullshitting?
At this rate, I might.
You might. I could be your guest. I mean, it costs like, it's like $30.
Who's the character on Network? It's Sybil the Soothsayer.
No.
You remember, you've seen Network.
I've never seen Network.
You've never seen Network?
There is a handful of like classic films I've never seen.
What is
like,
wrong?
I just watched Touch of Evil this week.
For the first time?
Never seen Touch of Evil before.
Well, tell me, you had to get a screener to watch it, didn't you?
Well, no,
They
sent me the Blu-ray.
Ooh.
And that's why I like doing Blu-ray reviews, because every now and then you get sent these movies that, for someone like me, at least at this point now, I watch so many new films in the theater and stuff that gets on Blu-ray. I don't have a whole lot of free time to just watch, I haven't seen this lately, you know, or I have never seen this. So.
Never seen Touch of Evil.
I never seen Touch of Evil.
Wow. Wow, that's, what was the first one we just mentioned? Oh, Network.
Network. I've not seen Network, no.
There was a great book that just
came
out about it.
Also not seen The Towering Inferno. I don't know.
I've never seen that, yeah.
I don't know if that's considered a huge
that's
gap
below me. I don't
my
know.
Cinematic knowledge.
No, Network is great. Network, when they redesigned the whole news show to make it, it was,
it's
the concept, right?
Mad as Hell, I'm not going to take it anymore, right?
Yeah. The Dave Itzkopf book. Yeah, which, by the way, Dave Itzkopf, if you're listening, good book. I will give you a free plug for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and Stephen King, you're an asshole for spoiling Game of Thrones for all the other people who are writers.
Hey, Stephen King, guess what? We have no respect for you. Hashtag Ohio Marathons. So there.
It's not even a hashtag.
Please come to our
at
event.
Symbol.
at Ohio Lord. Marathons. Hey,
how old are you?
We're gonna st- no, they do hashtag. Well, I heard Twitter's
they do hashtags.
I heard Twitter's phasing out hashtags potentially. Because they think it's just not part of the Twitter.
Where'd
ethos.
You read this?
I get around.
What is it? What sort of, you do realize.
I get around.
You know, sometimes when stuff's on Facebook and you click on the link, sometimes you just have to look at what the.
It goes to a Russian site.
Well, no, it'll go to like site like bullshit stories about whatever.
Yeah.
Bullshitstories.com.
We're going to start
what
a Twitter.
Your food is killing you.
We are going to start a Twitter feud with Stephen King. That's how we're going to sell more tickets. Yeah.
He's not going to care.
At Stephen King.
Enough people started Twitter feuds with him this past week.
Yeah. At Stephen King, what's your deal? Hashtag over the hill. Hashtag Ohio Marathons. So anyway, yeah, in Network, when they redesigned the news show to make it this like tabloid extravaganza, they have Howard Beale, the mad prophet of the airwaves, and then they have Sybil the soothsayer, and she's the psychic. And they have this whole set, and they roll her out. She has her own little like rolling platform, and she's like, I'm here to tell your fortune. Yeah, you should see Network. I was going to make a joke, but now you've made me cry by saying you haven't seen
there's
Network.
There's a lot of movies I haven't seen. It's amazing.
Hey, everybody out there, go see Network.
Everybody, there's got to be some movies. There's movies you haven't seen. There's got to be some movie you haven't
seen. What's your Twitter handle? It's at Kevin Carr, right?
Kevin Carr.
Hey, everybody out there, go see Network and then bombard Kevin's Twitter account at Kevin Carr and say, hey, douchebag, go see Network. What's your problem?
and tweet in an accent.
Hey, hack. Yeah, go see Network.
Idiot.
You're going to see Turbo 2. Go see Network, you hack. Love. Or hashtag shock around the clock.
Well, see, that's a great tragedy of the job that I do. I have to go see, like, Grown Ups 2 when I could be watching Network.
That is a tragedy. Network. That is like
Networks. Networks was the sequel, apparently, starring Adam Sandler.
Starving children in Indonesia and Kevin not being able to see Network because he has to go see what's the one you're going to see? The Haunted House 2.
Oh yeah, God, I'm seeing Haunted House 2.
Yeah,
this week. God, and I have to go see that. I could see something good, but nope, gotta go see it because the radio needs me.
Kevin's family has to eat, so Haunted House 2. It's all about him. So,
Let's move on to the next.
There are movies I haven't seen. Okay. Yes, a lot of
it's
movies
gotta
I haven't seen.
It's got to be those embarrassing holes in your cinematic history. Sounds gross.
Yeah, like, you know what makes me laugh.
Gotta be embarrassing holes somewhere.
Yeah, I have a lot of those.
I'm an expert on embarrassing holes.
You are, yeah. Yeah.
Do not click on the Facebook link that goes to embarrassingholes.com.
Embarrassingholes.com.
And please don't Google image search it either. Okay,
yeah.
What's the next one? You don't mention
the next
Shining.
Film.
Let's talk
the
about
next,
the Shining.
All right, The Shining.
You mentioned The Shining.
The Shining.
Which has shown twice?
Twice. 1993, my first 24-hour horror marathon back at Ye Old Drexel North, now a gym. And 2005,
so
actually.
Ironic.
I know. 2005, at the second two-headed marathon, we showed it, and we dolled up the Grandview lobby as the ballroom from the Overlook Hotel.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we thought about it for a second, and part of it was thinking, well, is it too soon to bring that back? Then we also thought, well, we always try to include at least a few titles that are pretty recognizable that people would like, but that the casual fan might come in for, too, hence The Exorcist last year.
Yeah.
And that was the 40th anniversary, and that also had, it hadn't shown in a while. But The Shining, it's such an evergreen film now because...
Is it going to be on DCP?
It's on DCP, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to see a different version.
Yeah, I mean, you'll say, well, and I can testify. I have seen the DCP.
Testify!
I've seen...
Amen, brother.
The DCP of The Shining. It came
it's
to
a
me,
good one.
It came to me in a dream, the DCP of The Shining, and it said, come to me, Joe Neff, and I looked
that's
at it, and now I'm
that.
Blind, you and that's be, why I have to do podcasts because be I can't see... Yeah, I'm going to...
I hear it looks good.
Actually, it does. It sounds fantastic for a mono soundtrack. It sounds deep and fantastic.
Mono soundtrack because that's how it was recorded.
It was recorded that way, yeah. I saw it in Los Angeles about a year ago, and it looked great. Warner Brothers does some real nice DCPs, so kudos to them.
That's good.
Well, and it's, if anything, when we showed The Shining in 2005, it's obviously a classic. But in the last 5 years, six, seven, 8 years, well, oh God, actually, in the last 9 years... Not dating myself. In the last 9 years, the appreciation for The Shining has reached this new level. You have like Room 237, the documentary, and the conspiracy theories, and the academic theories about it within that and other things. Lee Unkrich, who directed Toy Story 3, you know about his site, the Overlook Hotel?
No.
Lee Unkrich, who directed Toy Story 3 and worked on the other two, is a huge Shining fanatic.
Okay.
Did you know that in Toy Story number one, the carpet in Spike, the evil kid, the carpet in his house.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Is the carpet from the Overlook Hotel. Okay, yeah. The not the swimming amoeba carpet that's in room 237, but the swimming block amoeba carpet.
The penises. The meshed penises.
If that's what you want to see.
That's what it's all
That's
over
what
the
you want to see.
Movie.
Yeah, it is penis, all penis, penis all the time.
It's like an episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Wiener, wiener.
Okay, okay, side on. Note, you'll be ashamed. I've never watched Game of Thrones.
Neither have I. I don't have HBO.
Oh, well.
And at this point, I don't. No, that was a South Park reference.
Oh, I haven't watched South Park in a long time either.
They did a song about wieners.
I basically watch Mad Men, and then I watch it again, and then I watch it again, and then I sit out on a balcony like Don Draper, and I cry, and then the next episode comes on.
And you drink bourbon and smoke cigarettes.
I look balefully out the window and say,
you have hot women have sex with you?
Why is my life so tough? Yeah, that's all I really do. But Lee Unkrich is a huge Shining fanatic, and he has a website called The Overlook Hotel.
Mm.
And it's like all the Shining ephemera you could think of, and he pulls out old publicity stills you've never seen. He has fan videos. He has, like, lost script pages. The guy loves The Shining. And considering he's worked for Pixar and he directed Toy Story 3, he probably has either A, some time, or B, some money to throw into this cool website.
Sure.
There's another one called KDK12. Which
Wait,
is the
like K?
K the letters K D uh-huh. K and then okay. 1 2 KDK12 is the and I'm gonna mess this up and Twitter will be mad at me but KDK12 is
like
the code the code name that Shelley Duvall gives to the station that she's calling on the ham radio.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She says like KDK1 to KDK12 or KDK12 to KDK1. KDK12 is
God
like,
damn that's obscure.
I know. Yeah. Well, so is the website. KDK12. Is like the Overlook Hotel for advanced studies.
Okay.
And it gets into all, I mean, some of the things
for
are just
super nerds.
It is. Yeah. Well, and it's, I think the guy, I'm pretty sure the guy who runs it, I think he was in room 237 as
is
a talking
he,
head or
he
a commentator.
Is he an old black man who runs the, and then he like, can he shine at the same time?
I don't engage in racism. Okay. Oh, I'm post racism. So can we just kind of get over that? Yeah, maybe. I mean,
is he bow-legged?
Scatman Carruthers. The ghost of Scatman Carruthers is very
bow-legged.
Mad right now. No, it's...
I didn't call him. I just identified him as a black guy.
I'm sorry, Scatman.
Dude,
I really am.
Seriously.
Wherever you are. The Scatman Carruthers...
I'd be more offended by my description of his bow-leggedness.
Do you think...
I mean, he looks like an earwigs stood up on its back and walked around.
Do you think the Scatman Carruthers estate is on Twitter?
No. I doubt it.
Maybe they are.
They're older than you.
But yes, they are. That is true. The KDK12, it's got some interesting, you know, theories and insights and like, oh, did you notice there's this pattern throughout the film that is kind of obscure, but you might not notice. But then it has some really out there cool theories about Kabbalah and the Kabbalah map of the universe and how it ties into parts of The Shining and numerology
in
The Shining.
Okay, now this is getting to the point where this is why, I mean, no one, and just to say, you're not showing 237. You're not showing room 237.
I don't know at this point.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I would love to see it, not just because I've seen it before.
Yeah.
And I would just love to see it to count how many times somebody in random areas of the audience yells bullshit during the whole thing. Just because it's full of bullshit. But it's still
fascinating. That's a very Midwest answer to give, Kevin. You know, I don't know.
That's what I do.
No, here's the thing. I would love to show it because I loved it. And just for that, because, yeah, there is a decent amount of bullshit. But, that whole movie is all about... It's about the power of art to inspire.
Yeah.
Like the fact that this movie, which was a Stanley Kubrick adaptation of a big, mega popular Stephen King haunted house book, could... continue to inspire people, not just as like, oh, that's a cool film and that's an iconic film and it's kind of, you know, has some camp value in some circles, but that people would find inspiration from that and devote large swaths of their life to picking it apart like that. And well, for example, in the film, and this isn't giving that much away, and if you haven't seen it, I don't know.
Wait, 237 or?
In room 237. Okay. Yeah. Well, in The Shining too, but it's brought up in room 237. The whole deal about the mystery window in Allman's office.
Oh, yeah, the impossible job.
The impossible window where if you really look behind it in the architecture of the Overlook, there's a hallway with an elevator. Was that a continuity error? Possibly. Was Stanley Kubrick enough of a... I don't even want to say this because it'll make me sound ridiculous, but then again, hey. Was Stanley Kubrick... did he have enough of an impish sense of humor? There we go. I pulled that one out.
I just had this sudden image of Stanley Kubrick... some bizarre amalgamation between Stanley Kubrick and Mr. Tumnus from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe that is going to haunt my dreams forever.
Hello, I'm impish Stanley Kubrick.
Impossible window.
Yeah. Did he have enough of a sense of humor that he, like, for instance, with the 2001 rumors about that he faked the moon landing, did he have enough of an impish sense
Bullshit!
Of humor that he kind of, like, subtly stoked that over the years? Yeah, absolutely. He knew kind of about that stuff. Yeah. Or is it some kind of immense, immaculate, minute detail of the film that he put in there thinking, wouldn't this make you think about it? Like, it's a ghost hotel. I don't know. But it's interesting. And yeah, I mean, is a lot of it probably complete
it
speculation?
Also, and here's the other thing, and this is what's so fascinating about a movie like Room 237 and The Shining.
Yes.
Is something like that impossible jog. It's absolutely right. You watch the movie and you, like, walk around and you're like, well, there's obviously not a courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious. But getting there, and I've worked on movies, I've seen behind the scenes of movies, I'm intimately familiar with this. Sometimes they're just like, I want this scene to look more interesting.
Yeah.
And if it was a blank wall, it wouldn't be interesting. Mm-hmm. It'd be more interesting to have it. And guess where it is? Well, I want to have this long tracking shot of him coming, well, I'll just put a light up back there.
Yeah.
And it'll look, nobody will notice. Yeah. Now people
I can buy that maybe is what happened too. And that's the weird thing. It's a testament to Kubrick too, as the power of a dead man, basically, to continue to inspire people, because he cultivated that image of being this maniacal control freak. Mm. And this guy who was so...
I think he was a maniacal.
I mean, there was a lot of that to him. But yeah. he also cultivated that as well. I mean, people who knew him and people who hung out with him were like, oh, yeah, it's Stanley's just... I mean, he likes to get the job done, but he's kind of a normal guy. He's not some kind of weirdo hermit
freak. Well, but
if
he has a reputation for never wanting to leave the UK...
Yes.
To shoot a movie.
Yeah.
He would do it, but he'd be just like, well, you know what? I kind of have this reputation. I don't have to. Yeah. You know, it's like when my kids were babies and they had a time for diaper changes, my wife would be like, would you like to change a diaper or would you like me to? And I'm like, well, I would like you to.
Yeah.
I was not against changing a poopy diaper. Mm-hmm. Trust me, I've done plenty of that. But if given the choice...
And
you know, so many men do that, and this is going completely off the rails, but so many men do that where they embrace that stupid male attitude because it gets them out of changing a poopy diaper. And that's the way it got Stanley Kubrick out of having to fly intercontinental,
wow,
transcontinental flights.
That's, wow. I never thought of it that way.
I have just tied Stanley Kubrick filmmaking to poopy diapers.
Wow. First so you're saying his films are shit then?
No.
Wow, thanks. Yeah.
The people had to work with, that was shit. Changing that. And then he put on a fresh diaper and it's amazing and beautiful and it smells
His
nice.
Daughter is still alive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she might be very angry if she's listening to this.
She's listening. She's sitting at Stephen King's house smoking cigarettes.
Vivian Kubrick and Stephen King standing there going, they're going down. Now.
Stephen King's like, fuck them.
Yeah. Well, and it's a testament too to what's...
Run you over, Stephen King.
Hey, Big Steve, I didn't say that. That was Kevin that threatened to run you over in his Jeep or whatever he has. Yeah, great, great.
I need a new car.
I've always wanted to get sued by Stephen King.
Local
headlines. Local.
I'm going to sue you for some ramen noodles, man.
Local moron sued by Stephen King. Yeah.
I would buy that for $1.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hey! Oh, RoboCop.
Okay.
So, yeah,
I think this is going to have to be a multi-part series.
Yeah, there we go. We'll get back to The Shining.
Shining! Talk about Shining.
Kubrick cultivating that image, also, it's a relic of a past era when people like that would do it, and there was more of a sense of mystery, and you could do it. Stanley Kubrick wouldn't be on Twitter today because it would give away too much.
No, he wouldn't.
It really would. Yeah,
it's an amazing statement.
And he is
a
guy.
So true.
Yeah, now the Kubrick estate will issue a statement. We are,
like,
not against Twitter.
William Friedkin's on Twitter for crying out loud.
That's,
you know?
William Friedkin, though. He loves to talk.
Well, that's
that, I've seen that guy live. He likes to talk a
lot.
But
Kubrick would go to Twitter.
He would lurk.
He'd go to Twitter to see what people are saying.
He would lurk, and he would set up a fake Stanley Kubrick account by, like, a fan, and it might be him. But then you'd always have to wonder, is it real Kubrick or not Kubrick?
Yeah.
Kubrick has probably rolled over 5 times in his grave right now, even mentioning this. But yeah. I mean, if he's really dead. But if you go back, yes, if he is.
Or living at the Overlook Hotel.
If you go back to Room 237, that's what I think is awesome about it, is I never sat at that movie and thought, yes, he absolutely faked the moon landing. I believe that. I just thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. It's in some way like a big bullshit session.
Yeah.
But really, past that, it is. It's like, wow, The Shining has this power to inspire. And you see all these things in the last 10 years, all like the websites I mentioned and the documentary. And there aren't that many modern horror films that continue to resonate in bizarre ways like that. And that's why I think it's we weren't that reticent to bring it back again this close to when it previously played.
Well, part of the reason why I think it's important to bring it back is because so many people, especially the diehard audience, even if they thought Room 237 was utter total bullshit from beginning to end,
mm-hmm.
It's a movie that when you see, you then want to go back and watch The Shining. Yes. Whether you think it's absolute hogwash or whether you think there might be something to... Because in my opinion, 237, you watch it and you're like, that's bullshit, bullshit. Well, I don't know. Why is he reading a Playgirl? You know, that kind of thing. So yeah. there is all of that going on. And so even though a lot of people have seen it and then gone back and rewatched The Shining, I think it's cool to watch it again. And you're going to see it on the big screen. You're probably going to... You're going to be challenged, especially if you've seen it multiple times, because most of the audience is going to have seen it a lot.
It is.
If you've seen it once, you've probably seen it a couple times.
Yeah.
You're going to be challenged to look beyond just what is being presented as the traditional story, which is kind of awkwardly presented as it is, and to look past that. And that's, I think, that's what's neat, because when I watched The Shining after seeing Room 237, it was a very different experience.
It makes you rethink it. And I think it's what makes that. And this is weird because for a long time, I think The Shining had a rep as being like, oh, it's The Shining, but it's an okay film. But I think it's a really great film because, you know, The Shining has not overtly scared me in 20 years. Yeah. Like, I don't jump anymore. You know what's going to happen. And in some ways, The Shining was one of those films when I was young that I saw a lot in a very limited span of time because a lot of theaters around town had midnight series. And The Shining and Clockwork Orange and all those would show. And so you get so familiar with it after a while that it's like, I know what's coming.
Yeah.
But going back to it again years later and having different frames of references and thinking about it in a different way, or like paying attention to the production design above purely the story, there's so much in that film that is that you've never thought about before. You've never there's what? On that KDK12 website, there's a shot of, what is it? I think the hallway when the two twins appear for one of the first times, and the light fixture that's on the ceiling looks like it's this weird mirror image light fixture. Yeah. I don't know if how they captured it or if it's a weird anomaly in that or what, but it's just one of these bizarre little unexplained things. And for a film like that to maintain that much mystery, I think that's why people still go into it.
Yeah.
Because even though the King story is pretty straightforward, it's a haunted house. The guy's in trouble. His family goes there. The haunted house wants the kid. They go through the dad. The dad finally goes nuts, but the dad finally reconciles at the end. Boom. Kid and mother get away.
Yeah.
That's the basic story. But the film, and this is why I think there's part of Stephen King in the subsequent 30 years. Part of him, I think, enjoys poking the Shining cult because it's good publicity for him. But part of me makes me wonder, like, why he would continue to go back to saying, oh, I really didn't like that. Because he's even said before, well, my books, nothing happens to my books. They're up on the bookshelf.
Yeah.
They're just film versions of them. And I think the film version is a really interesting version of that story. And it leaves a lot of really interesting mysteries out there. And it really, it's uncomfortable in some ways because of that.
Yeah.
Well,
it's one of those few pieces of literature that's been adapted to film that is not a good adaptation of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
but it's an offshoot that's completely holistically. Jaws is like that too.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Jaws, very different.
Yeah,
the book's very different from the movie. Although the obviously it's a shark. You know, I mean, it's a Moby Dick story.
Oh.
You know, but what's going on in the book versus the movie are extremely different, and they're both classics in their own right, but you really can't tie them together beyond just their very basic blurb.
Well, and he went back and adapted it faithfully for TV in, what, 1997 or 98?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of there.
Yeah.
It's hamstrung by being so faithful that there's not much past that. And it's
saddled by just its era, whereas The Shining, there's a certain, and maybe it'll be better in 20 years, but there's a certain timelessness to stuff from the 70s and 80s that you can say, well, that's the era, but there was a pureness to it.
Yeah.
Whereas like early to mid 90s TV movies, there's a cheapness to that.
You're right.
That
may be
wonderful in 20 years.
And that's interesting, because with the advent of HD and the quality of what you're able to do, especially on cable.
Yeah.
That has changed a lot of that aspect of TV movies. I mean, today you might be able to do The Shining for HBO.
Yeah. And well, just look at Hannibal.
NBC
show, major network.
I finally started watching that about a month ago. And yeah, I mean that
you're
and,
not even talking, you know, you're not even talking, like you can sit there and say, well, you know, like The Walking Dead or something, or Game of Thrones, you know, if you're talking about something on cable, but just a regular old mainstream show. It was 2004 was when it really changed.
Yeah.
With Lost really helped propel it into a cinematic quality television.
Yeah, yeah.
But and to the point, what's funny is I got a TV series to review once that Matthew Fox was in. It came out in 2000 or 2002. I forget what it was even. And it just looks so TV movie. It just looks so much like a TV show. Now that line has been blurred a lot. And I think HDTV, widescreen television, bringing a cinematic presentation in your room.
And that's the key, I think, is the presentational aspects. I mean, I'm not, after watching it, I'm not surprised that Hannibal is struggled ratings wise because it's challenging. I mean, it really is.
Could you imagine if they did Twin Peaks with HDTV back in the day?
I mean, and you look at the old Twin Peaks DVDs, especially season one, and you can tell, I mean, a lot of thought went into the production design and the visual look of the show and the audio.
Way ahead of its time. I mean, but, it's, you know, its contemporaries were.
But today, I mean, today they could probably get a deal for Twin Peaks with a pay cable channel and just run with what they wanted to do, just not have the mystery solved, stretch it out over three or four seasons, and people would watch because they're used to that quality. But, the Hannibal thing is that I can see why it's not highly rated because it's very challenging and it plays around with those tropes of the procedural. Mm. I mean, you could so tell it's like, okay, this is when we need to have the two guys who are the medical examiners and they're kind of wacky, and here's where we need to have this character. But man, what it does with the subject matter and with the visual look, especially like you're talking about, is just to see something like that on mainstream TV is pretty amazing.
It's pretty, pretty rare. And it really is.
So. Even a junky show like The Following, you know, I watched The Following I watched the first season.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch The Following?
No.
I mean, the concept is great. And the first two episodes are kind of slam bang.
Yeah.
Then it starts getting a little dumb. And then all of a sudden, all the cops turn into the stupidest people in the world. And you kind of. Stretching credibility, good.
Yeah.
Annihilating credibility or believability is, and I haven't really picked up season two yet. Mm-hmm. But even a show like that, and now The Following fans are probably going to kill us. great. Now all The Following fans are not going to come to the marathon.
Because it'll be on Twitter.
It will be on Twitter, yeah. But even The Following, something like that, there's a real appeal to it because it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
It's that base quality that has been introduced, and it's pretty fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right, so
I think you know what,
you want to stop?
Should we stop or should we do one more and break and we can do the next one in another couple weeks? And
wow, you mean we're going to like tease? We're going to tease half of the tease.
Half the tease that people already know.
We're going to tease we're going to tease half the tease that people already know.
But
and
I think,
say,
I think there's a lot of I think some of these warrant discussions.
You know, I think
you're
right.
Nosferatu, we talked about the difference between the two. And Shining, you know, addressing 237.
Yeah. Well, okay, why don't we end on The Invisible Man? Because the remaining three we have so far could go off in a lot of different directions.
Yes, The Invisible Man might be a little quicker.
Yeah, The Invisible Man. Never played at a horror marathon. Yeah. I keep thinking now we'll have nothing to talk about in the fall. We'll just replay this. We'll say, hey, everybody, it's Joe and Kevin. Remember when we talked in the spring? Listen to that part again.
You're going
to
have, what, five or six more
movies?
Oh, yeah,
we'll have more films. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, The Invisible Man, the James Whale classic, and you know, I haven't seen it in a long time.
I watched it about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And it remains one of my favorite classic Universal monster. If you talk about the originals, I mean, once they get into, like, House of Dracula, House of Frankenstein, they get very goofy and campy. But if you talk, well, pretty much after The Wolfman. Everything goes off the rails. But if you talk about the original, like all those original, where they're just mining all the monsters or creating their own, The Invisible Man remains one of my favorites.
Yeah. And it's got a very wicked sense of humor about it, which you tend to forget sometimes if you haven't seen it in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's an all-time classic. And again, I know we've kind of beaten this to death, but for anyone who hasn't heard our little sermon about this, you know, booking films is getting to be more challenging because we don't have access to all the 35 millimeter prints we used to have. So we have to kind of pick and choose in certain ways. And if we see, hey, like Universal Studios has a bunch of cool classic DCPs of their titles, which they do. We showed Wolfman last year. It was great. If we want to get a classic film, a classic black and white film, and ensure that we have at least one of those, sometimes we'll fish into that And then we'll say, well, what haven't we shown? Mm. Invisible Man came up. We actually asked the audience last year about it, and they had a pretty positive response to getting that. So
it's DCP, I'm assuming.
On DCP, yeah. We only currently have one 35mm film booked.
Which is the greatest movie ever.
It is a movie that might change your life, make you leave your spouse and kids. Not you. Well, maybe you.
I've seen it.
It's still
with her, though.
It's kind of like seeing the face of God.
It's amazing.
Yeah. But for those of you who know nothing about the marathons or stay off the web, we'll talk about those next time because there's more to say.
But what's so great about The Invisible Man, and I'm just going to say this about The Invisible Man, is that 1931 or 33?
Oh.
What year was it?
You're the one who has the computer in front of you.
I can look that up. But anyways, regardless, it's the 30s. It's really in the infancy of synced sound, even though there was some pretty innovative stuff that was done during the silent era. Mm-hmm. Eventually Hollywood kind of goes into less spectacular visuals mm-hmm. once sound comes in, especially as you go into the 40s. But you were still doing some amazing stuff in the special effects in this. You kind of have to remind yourself they're 80 years old. And when you watch it, it's pretty amazing what they do.
And when you read about how they did it, you think, oh, that's it? Yeah. Wow. It's a testament to ingenuity and craftsmanship. And
I mean, it's something anybody can do now with a personal computer, but, you know, 80 years ago to achieve the Invisible Man effects. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, what's fascinating about Invisible Man is that it's Claude Rains you don't see him because he's invisible.
Ta-da! You know, wow, but thanks for spoiling that.
But
boy,
that's a big deal because back then, again, because of the infancy of synced sound, the idea of not being seen in a movie could be pretty offensive to a star.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a big star back then, too. Right? So, yeah, and testament to him. He was willing to play that role and be that guy and fully embrace the hammy evil of that guy. So, I'm talking about this now like I just saw it yesterday, and I'm probably forgetting most of the film.
Well, it is, but it's also chilling, too. Even though, you're right, it has that wicked sense of humor, and it is almost meanly sarcastic at times.
Yeah. Yeah.
It also is extremely dark. It's one of the darker films. When you talk character, it's one of the darker films. Because, you have Dracula, and he's a vampire. Okay, he's a vampire. You expect him
But he's very romantic, and he's swarthy and seductive.
And Frankenstein, he's just misunderstood, and the monster got a bum rap.
We played around with science, and
Abby
he messed
normal
up.
Brain
and the Wolfman. Mm-hmm. God, the Wolfman is tragic.
The tragic story,
The Invisible Man.
He's a monster.
He likes it.
He's the biggest
monster. He loves it. He is the human monster, and totally gets off on disappearing and being able to do what he wants, and... Yeah, that sounds good. I like that.
Maybe for the costume contest, I'll be the Invisible Man, not realizing I'm not invisible. Start taking off my clothes, see how far the audience
More live Kevin nudity this fall in October. Hey, you've got like 6 months to get ready for this. Oh, come on, fans. Are you?
I could get even fatter.
Hashtag nude Kevin Carr. We're such pricks,
Before we leave, before we end, I do want to just say, there's sort of the appeal. Well, tickets obviously aren't on sale, but they'll be
someday.
Going on sale, I'm sure, at the end of the summer.
Yeah, sometime probably, hopefully in August.
Okay. But the date is...
October 18th and 19th.
October 18th and 19th.
Yes.
At the Drexel Theater.
And we are now officially recorded that we've told you here back in April, October 18th and 19th, because we love you, the audience.
This show did drop the date the first time.
It did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We at the sci-fi podcast.
Yeah, sci-fi podcast. People are like, oh, wait, did they mention when this was going to be? Yep.
Twitter was aflame.
Yeah.
It was up in arms. It was like, what? What was it? There was a date for the horror marathon.
Holy cow.
Hashtag, oh, my God.
Everyone got their fedoras and ran into the phone booths to talk to the press agents. But for anybody who's never been to a marathon, what do you expect to see? It's not just the movies.
Yeah,
it's also all the other shenanigans.
Well, I mentioned to you that before in our little pre-show prep chat that we're trying to really emphasize how the marathons, they're the films. Absolutely. They are the films. And without the films, there wouldn't be the marathons, obviously. And we care about the lineups, and we always try to give you the best lineup that we can. And a lot of thought goes into that. But to just say they're the films is missing out on 70% of the event. Because the event itself, it's the contests. It's the people. I gave this big inspirational speech at Sci-Fi this year talking about how, hey, what is so cool about this event? And people ask us all the time. They say, well, yeah, but I've seen all those films.
Yeah.
Or, hey, I have all those on Blu-ray. I could watch them at home. And what I try to tell them is, yeah, but you're missing out on the whole aspect because, yeah, you could do that. But here in the theater that we're in, this is a chance for one rotation of the planet for us to get all these people from disparate backgrounds, people who work in a checkout counter or are teachers or businessmen or unemployed or, you know, that have odd jobs or that are, you know, are living their life's dream, to take them all together all of a sudden. And for one day, they can forget about everything else in their lives, in their world, and the pressure and all that. And they can get together and on a giant screen, watch all these movies and react to all these movies and share this. And it sounds really new agey, but I'll just say it, share this like common energy that a crowd like that has.
Yeah.
And that's been the case with these events over the years. And it used to be when we had 800 people, that was easy to see. You know, now that we have way less seats, it can be a little bit harder. And especially for, I don't want this to sound condescending, but if you're younger and you don't experience that stuff enough. Yeah, or
for you whippersnappers.
For you whippersnappers out there. You just don't get it. You don't, yeah. Well,
Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, oh boy. I'm sinking into, I'm becoming
star-studded event.
This is like
an old TV special where they're like, it snows in at the inn and suddenly here comes Klaus Kinski with his bugles and Jimmy Stewart lassoing the moon.
I'm becoming the Rich Little of these podcasts. Hey, Klaus, you're a little strange over there, buddy. Come on, let's talk. Like, get out of my face, Jimmy Stewart. I'll eat your nose.
That would be amazing.
Somebody needs
to animate this.
That's the new internet meme, Klaus Kinski and Jimmy Stewart. That's what it is. The comparison I give, and people still do this, it's like the midnight screenings.
Mm-hmm.
It's why people still go to those things. It's why young people still go to those things, because there's an energy seeing a debut screening of something with 300 to 400 people, a live audience, and that. And the marathon, in some ways, it's not an exact corollary, but in some ways, it's like that vibe. At its best, with a packed house, a marathon has this real awesome energy to it. And when there's a film that the audience loves, they react in that way. When there's a film the audience hates, see Electroma from a couple sci-fis ago, the energy from that was some of the most vociferous energy I've seen in a long time. I like the film, by the way, Daft Punk, if you're listening.
I liked Electroma. I didn't watch it. I went to dinner and I came back and... I rented it like later.
Or when there's a film where they don't know what to expect,
mm-hmm.
and it's a complete surprise to the audience, and you get that feeling like, wow, this was cool. We saw a film up in Boston at their sci-fi marathon in February called Compliance. Have you seen this? Did you have a screener of it?
Is that the...
It's a real low-budget indie sci-fi with Nick Brennan from Buffy the Vampire Slayers in it.
I want to think I have, but I can't remember.
Friends get together for a party, and there's a comet passing overhead, and weird things start to happen. Or, did I say compliance?
Yeah.
Whoops, no, not compliance.
No. That was the McDonald's rapey one, right? I'm about to say, I'm
not
like,
compliant.
Did we watch the same movie? You're like, oh, it's a laugh riot. It's a hoot. A bunch of people get together, convince a girl to take off her clothes, and a little bit of blowjobs happen.
Yeah.
Now, what happens in this compliance?
Not compliance. It's called, oh, Jesus.
Severance?
No, not severance. Not confluence. It's called coherence. Coherence.
I have not seen
not compliant. Yeah. Here I'm about to tell the story. Yeah, the crowd loved compliance. They were cheering for five minutes afterwards. They're like, that was awesome.
Finally, I've been waiting for that the whole time.
God,
I got to try that. Jesus.
Coherence. Anyway, they run a festival aspect of there along with the marathon the week before. And Coherence was one of those films, and they showed it at the marathon. And most people didn't really know what to expect. And they thought, it's a low-budget indie sci-fi film. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
And it took the crowd a while to get into it. But man, once they did, once they got their hooks into it, and when they got to the twists that start popping up in the climax and near the end, the crowd reaction was phenomenal. And at the end, literally, there was like a 2-minute ovation for that film because the crowd was so into it. And those are the special moments. Those are the moments like Dead Alive in 1992 when it had its premiere as Brain Dead at the 1992 Night of the Living Drexel. Even though I was not there, I know the stories. And most nobody knew what to expect other than it's this Peter Jackson guy and I might have seen Meet the Feebles or Bad Taste. And
Stuart Gordon introduced it, I believe.
I think you might be right. Mm-hmm. And you can back me up from what I've heard that the reaction to that was off the charts. Yeah.
It was amazing. And what's I'm not a huge Dead Alive fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge zombie fan.
You are a fascist, so I know that. But, yeah.
But no, it's if you're going to watch Dead Alive, that is the way to see it.
Yeah.
You know, just watching Dead Alive at home, lying down, kind of dozing off in the couch, that's not the way to see Dead Alive.
No.
The way to see Dead Alive is when the guy yells, "I kick ass for the Lord," to not be able to hear a thing on screen for like 30 seconds because everyone's cheering so loud.
Yeah.
That's the way to see
it. Well, this year at Sci-Fi, we showed Delicatessen. And that was a case where I pushed for that. And I said, well, this would be something a little bit different and slightly edgy, I guess you could call it that. But more like an arty, different film. And City of Lost Children went over well years ago. Mm-hmm. So we show that. But I'm thinking beforehand, I don't know, maybe the audience will boo this one. Or maybe they'll get bored. But the reaction the audience had was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, Delicatessen. But it was... They laughed at all the right parts, and they appreciated all the dry humor. When you get to the end of the film, you could tell there was a real building energy in the audience, like, oh, this is really cool, I haven't seen this in a long time. Your son, if I remember, Liam, said his favorite film at the marathon was Delicatessen.
He did say that. Yes.
And Liam is, for those of you listening out there, innocent and adorable and basically flawless in most ways. Wow. So if he likes it... Which is amazing, coming from Kevin's loins, that something like that could exist. But.
And you might be able to see my loins.
So, to summarize, you're getting nude at some point, and I'm trolling Twitter and eating a hat. I think that's a great start for this little free jazz, free association series of podcasts we have. So,
all right, we better go. We'll leave you on this one. Talk about the other films later. But... hope you enjoy this one. A little more rambling, a little more crazy. But if you need to find anything about this, you can go to, send them to horrormarathon.com.
Yeah.
Correct. Horrormarathon.com or Ohio Marathons on Twitter.
At Ohio Marathons.
We're
also on Facebook. Really, I guess the easiest way would be go to horrormarathon.com and we have a Facebook link on there.
Because it's the Ohio Science Fiction and Horror Marathon. So it's a bit of a mouthful.
If you can't read, possibly, yeah, but yes. Or talk, or
no. If you type in like, but no, I know if you type in the Ohio Marathon, you're going to get some bullshit sporting event.
We're working on that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
I know. I've been playing the part of the condescending prick today. I'll see you later. Hey.
All right. Well, with that, we're gonna leave now, and hope you enjoy it. We'll talk next time.
Thanks, Kevin.